I'm grateful to introduce our very first speaker tonight. He's a wonderful human being, and I consider him a really good friend of mine. His name is Ken, and I introduce him to you now.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ken.
Hi, Ken.
My goodness, look at all the people. Holy cow, I don't know if I'm scared to death or I'm just excited. I know I'm an ACA. So I'm the 15-minute speaker, and a real miracle happened today. You know, I was doing some work this morning. I didn't go to my normal meeting. I went to a later meeting, and I met Beth. And inspired by higher power, we decided that it would be a good thing tonight to do a 12-step. And I want to thank the organizers of the meeting, John and Larry here. And we decided that we would help you to work your program, to work the steps, work the first three steps. And the first three steps basically is let go and let God in five words. And so I'm going to speak for 30 minutes. And Beth is going to speak for 30 minutes. Okay? And we figured it would just work out better for everybody that way. Okay, I definitely belong here. I was raised in an alcoholic and dysfunctional family. My dad was an alcoholic, and basically he was just absent. He'd get up in the morning, he'd drink, he'd go to work. He was a high-functioning alcoholic. He'd go to work, and he'd come home from work, he'd drink, and he'd pass out right after dinner. And so I really didn't see much of him. But when I did see any of him at all, he was very critical and very harsh and very condemning. My mom was raised an unwanted child. And she had acquired a lot of anger and hostility and paranoia. And she passed it on to me. She told me that basically life sucks and so do you. Life isn't fair. Everything sucks and so do you. She told me that, both my parents told me that I was no good, I would never amount to anything, that I screwed up everything, that I caused my father to drink. You know, I'm like 5 years old, right? And So I grew up with very poor self-esteem. I didn't have any role models. You know, I was criticized because I acted awkwardly in a social environment. I was kept isolated. I wasn't allowed to go out and play with the other kids. I didn't have any role models for my parents. My dad certainly wasn't a male role model. And, who did I have to learn from? So I tried my best to get along with people, but, you know, according to my parents, I failed and failed and failed. I couldn't do anything right. I tried to get love from my parents. I'm a very cuddly person. I like to be physical and loving, and my parents gave me no love, gave me no physical love at all. They were just like, I feel like I was an unwanted child. And I did everything I could to get my parents to love me. I figured if only I could do the right thing, if only I could say the right thing. I kept failing and failing. I could not get love out of my parents. I was not allowed to express any emotions. I was told that I was silly. I was told that I should not, could not be angry. I was punished for being angry. I was punished for a lot of stuff I never did, which of course was very frustrating. It just drove me crazy. So I was afraid of people. I was especially afraid of angry people. I was afraid of my parents. I was a huge people pleaser. I would do anything to get love from people, to buy love from them. And I would do anything to keep people from being pissed off at me, because that just felt like horribly dangerous. The effect of this was that, and the other thing was, I learned I had to be self-sufficient. I didn't get any help doing anything for my parents. So if I wanted to do anything, I had to do it all. So I was a smart kid, fortunately, and I figured out how to figure things out and make things. I would make all kinds of toys and models and stuff, but I never got any help from my parents. And that went along into my adult life, is I felt that if anything was going to happen, I had to do it. I had to be the instigator. And it was very difficult for me to accept help from anybody because, you know, why would anybody want to help me? I'm a little piece of shit, right? And, you know, people pleasing, I wanted to give them. I wanted to get love from them. So I didn't want them giving me anything or doing anything for me. So I had a lot of difficulty growing up, and my dad died when I was 20. He died from alcoholism at the age of 51. And I moved out, and I was profoundly affected by alcoholism. I was like afraid of people, just everything that I just described. What I had done to try to bolster my self-esteem was I tried achievement. I went to school, I tried to get the best grades, I tried to achieve anything I tried to be the best. And I tried to bolster my ego. I would try to show I was better than other people. You can imagine how popular I was. You know, I would put other people down just to build myself up at their expense. And I just didn't understand. I didn't know how to act. I didn't know how to get along with people. One of the really interesting things that happened to me was, once I moved out of my family, you know, I was trying to get love from these unavailable people, my parents. And once I moved out, and I didn't realize I was doing this at the time, I would find people who were like my parents. I would find angry women, alcoholic women, emotionally unavailable women, and I would pursue them, trying to get love from them. Now, that wasn't a lot of fun, you know. You know, I was constantly getting abused because I was like such a people pleaser. I wouldn't stand up for myself. You know, I didn't want to make anybody angry. I just wanted to get love from them. So this went on. This was my romantic life for a long time, pursuing unavailable, angry, hurting, alcoholic women. Well, I eventually met someone about, you know, 20-something years ago, and she was a fellow ACA. And we were very much alike. We liked to take care of everybody else. So for a while, we took care of one another. And she was, you know, she was an ACA. She was just like me. So we had a really good time for about 10 years. And then she started getting into some situations where they were very difficult for her. Her little brother was starting to go through a divorce, and her little brother would call her up. He was very angry, and my wife would try to fix him, and she couldn't. And he was very angry, and she was very frustrated that she couldn't fix him. She couldn't take care of him. And she started to drink because she couldn't deal with these feelings of guilt and shame and really not being able to take care of somebody else. She started to drink and drink and drink, and it got worse and worse and worse. Something else happened. She had, her parents had basically left her as a teenager with a young boy who was, you know, her brother, but my wife raised him as if it were her baby. And right after the older brother was going through this divorce, the younger brother died from a heart attack at the age of 38. And this really sent my wife off the deep end. And she, in addition, she went back and she tried to take care of his family, who, I'm sorry, were just a bunch of users. And this caused her even more emotional distress. So she started drinking really, really heavily. She would get up in the morning and down a 750 of tequila and fall flat on her face in the living room. And I was left alone. I had been isolated. I'm the sort of person who, I get somebody who I love and I just want to be with them. And she disappeared, basically. And so I was angry and resentful, and I didn't know what to do. I tried everything I could to fix her. You know, I have a lot of resources as far as fixing people. But nothing I did seemed to work, you know. I had met my match. I couldn't fix this one. And then I reached a bottom with this whole thing. I had this little puppy who was just the love of my life. You know, puppy would sit in my lap, give me love. And it was just like, you know, this is my friend. I love this puppy. And my wife had a habit of letting the puppy out near busy intersections and taking it onto the lawn, like by the high school, to play. And I'd ask her not to do that over and over and over again. You know, please put the puppy on the leash and take it to where it's safe, and then let it play. Well, one night I got a call, and she said, puppy's dead. I let it out, and it got hit by a car. And I was just devastated. I mean, I had lost everything that was important to me. I lost my wife. I lost my puppy. It was just like, oh my God. I've never been so angry and so full of grief at any time in my life. And I was completely suicidal. I absolutely did not know what to do. My life was just not working. I was such a wreck. And I didn't believe in God, but I had nowhere to turn. They say there's no atheist in a foxhole. I fell to my knees and I asked a God I didn't believe in to help me. And I got help. It was the most amazing thing that ever happened to me. I felt this force, loving force, moving through me, guiding me, comforting me. And for quite a while after that, I had given up. My ego had just let go. This big ego I had that had to be in control, let go, and God came in. And for quite a while after that, I felt that I was in a play. I was an actor in a play, but I wasn't acting. Things were happening all around me, but I wasn't doing anything. It was a very strange feeling, but it was great, because suddenly everything was okay. Now, nothing had really changed. I'd still lost everything that was valuable to me, and I was living in chaos. My wife was still drinking, and it was horrible, but it was okay. The only thing that had changed was my attitudes. And I started going to Al-Anon. I did not start going to Al-Anon meetings. I was taken to Al-Anon meetings by my higher power. I started working the steps, and my life turned around, and I started to get really happy. I gained a lot of self-confidence. I had a lot of friends. I started taking care of myself. I started having fun. I stopped putting up with stuff that was happening at my house. Now, I had prayed that my wife would get sober and then life would be perfect again, right? That's all I wanted. Well, she stopped drinking and things got worse. Rather than us being together and being loving, what happened was she was very angry and she started raging on me, blaming me that I caused her to drink. She blamed me that she had to go out and get a boyfriend. And thank God I had a program where I heard other people tell me the same stuff. The alcoholics blame them for everything. Alcoholics don't take responsibility for their own behavior until they get in a program. And thank God I had this program, Al-Anon, basically at that time to help me and to give me some sort of reality check, some sort of sanity. So she was raging on me, and after a while I had enough courage to stand up for myself and say, hey, I'm not going to put up with this anymore. If you keep this up, I'm going to leave. And she kept it up and I left. I moved out. And it was one of the best things I did. Now, it's really interesting for me to say this to you. I did everything I could to help this person. And I left. She was angry. She was bitter. She had no friends. I left. And she got better. She had to learn how to take care of herself and get things done and help get people to help her. That's really humbling. That's really humbling. Everything that I did was just made the situation worse. So that really humbled me, and it was just a wonderful follow-up to my direct experience of God. So that's Al-Anon. What I learned in Al-Anon was not to try to control people, not to do for anyone what they can do for themselves, because it really sucks the life out of them. If I do something for someone that they can do, it prevents them from having the reward of doing it themselves. And if they do something badly, it prevents them from bearing the consequence of doing something badly. Me trying to live somebody else's life just sucks the life out of them. I learned not to do that. I learned to take care of myself and be a good role model, and that's the best thing I could do for anybody. Just leave people alone. Just love them, but don't try to fix them. So, after Al-Anon, I noticed that something was still not quite right. I was pretty happy, but there's a couple of things that weren't working. Laundry list trait number 5. We live life from the viewpoint of victims, and we're attracted by that weakness in our love and friendship relationships.
Laundry list rate number 9. We confuse love and pity and tend to love people we can pity and rescue. I found that I had this uncanny trait that I know many of us do, of being able to walk into a room and just pick out all the alcoholics. It's very easy because they're the ones who are cute and sexy. It's true. And I'm not going to do that now, okay? So, at this time, I was kind of ready to form a new relationship, and I found that I kept being attracted over and over again to emotionally unavailable women, alcoholics and hurting women and angry women. It's like, wow. And I didn't see how Al-Anon could help me with that. There was nothing in Al-Anon that talked about changing your emotions to be attracted to healthy people. It just, something was wrong. So about at this time, Duncan came to me and says, I want to start ACA in Santa Barbara. I go, awesome. Maybe this will help. And so about 3.5 years ago, Duncan got all the materials from World Service and Renee found us a room, and we, about a dozen of us, started meeting over here at Garden Court. And it was wonderful. It was just an incredible experience. You know, for about the first 2 months that we met, we all felt like crying and puking at the same time. Yeah, it was just amazing. And the other thing was that laundry list. I heard that laundry list. It's like, how can anyone who's never met me know me so well? It was like, wow, that was uncanny. Now, because of Alan and I, I'd gotten through a lot of those laundry list items, but there were still some that really had me bad, like laundry list trait number 9. And so I knew that I needed help. So, about 6 months into the program, I was going to a couple of ACA meetings now, and they were talking about stored emotions. And I noticed that most of my life that I would react to two things very inappropriately. A little thing would like tick me off, and I would go berserk with anger. And yeah, I remember I thought a parking lot attendant was making fun of me, and I jumped out of the car and I chased him around the parking lot. I was going to kill him. And the other thing was, I could be just slightly rejected, and I would have this, I would take it personally. Somebody would say they didn't want to have lunch with me. I'd take it personally. You know, what's wrong with me? What's, and it would bother me forever, you know. So there's two things that were difficult for me. One was anger, and one was abandonment. And so I started working with our groups in the book about stored emotions. Whenever I act inappropriately to the situation, it's something that happened in my childhood. It's not the situation that's happening now. It's from way back when. And it's something I'm not aware of. So I was told that I needed to feel my emotions, and I needed not to resist my emotions, and I needed to work through them. And once I felt them, without resisting them, things would be better. And I believe this, because I know these programs work. I have complete confidence in that. So for about 2 months, every day, something would happen that would be an abandonment issue. I would ask somebody to do something. It would turn me down. I would get stood up. It was unbelievable. Every day, at least 3 things would happen. And I would feel this horrible abandonment. And it was horrible, horrible. But fortunately, this program says, don't isolate. Don't isolate. And I knew that. Just call somebody. So I would call my program friends, and my program friends were great. They would listen to me, and they would come take me out, and they would hang out with me. And they got me through this very difficult time. And after about 2 months, I got over that, you know? Somebody would turn me down, abandon me. It's like, no big deal. It's cool. It's fine. So that was a big thing, learning to feel my emotions. The other really cool thing that happened to me is another ACA friend says, I want to start a group. I want to do a fifth step. So a group of 4 of us started a co-sponsor group, and we met twice a week for an hour and a half each time, 3 hours a week. And we worked through the red book and the yellow book, and we did all the steps. We did the fourth step, fifth step, six, seven, eight, nine. It took us about 9 months. And that was the best recovery experience of my entire life. And all I can say is if you hang in with this program, things will get better. This program is a miracle. We worked through the steps. I know step one in ACA is the best step one of any program I know of, because in the other 12-step programs, step one is we admitted we're powerless over our addiction. Here, it says, admitted we're powerless over the effects of growing up in an alcoholic dysfunctional family. That says it all, because not only does that say that I'm powerless over my addiction, it says I'm powerless to fix myself. Because in Al-Anon, you don't get to that until you get to step seven, which says, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Right? You're powerless to fix yourself. So, you know, in step seven, I didn't realize that, you know, my personality short... When did we start?
We started at seven.
Well, when did I start talking? I don't want to...
Okay.
I won't be much longer. Okay. So, you know, I didn't realize all my life I was trying to improve myself. I was trying to fix myself, and I took all these self-improvement programs, which helped a little, but they missed something fundamental, and they missed the fact that the ego is the big problem. And I can't fix myself. You know, I'm a controlling person. If I want to try to fix that, I'm going to try to control my controlling nature. It doesn't work. I'm judgmental. I want to fix that. Oh, judgment is bad. Oh, I'm bad. Something's wrong. I can't fix it. Like Einstein says, the same mentality that creates the problem can't fix the problem. So we need something outside of ourselves to help us. We need a higher power. So I appreciate that about step one in ACA. I had reached my bottom in Al-Anon. I found an experience of God. Step two was easy. Step three, I'm ready to say, okay. I turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood it. I didn't understand that until I got to step 11. I didn't understand what step three meant. Because in step 11, it says, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. I used to think that I could figure out my life, figure out what I wanted, and get it. Pray for it even. And step 11 says, you can't do that. You're incapable of figuring out what's good for you. Well, I proved that again and again by chasing alcoholic women. I proved that again and again by getting in these relationships where I was trying to control the uncontrollable. I didn't realize that, you know, the only thing I have to do is to pray for God's guidance. I can't fix you. I can't fix myself. And that doesn't leave me with a whole lot of stuff to do. You know? So I spend a lot of time praying for God's guidance. step four, I didn't realize there was anything wrong with me. I thought it was perfectly natural to have every addiction known to man. I abused alcohol, drugs, cocaine, marijuana, sex, love, work, gambling. Isn't it perfectly normal? Everybody around me was doing the same thing, you know? But, you know, doing step four and hanging out with healthier people, it's like, oh, there's an alternative. There's another way to live. Step five gave me the freedom to be myself. You know, admitting to God, to higher power, and to somebody else, all of my shortcomings, and having them say, oh, that's cool. I did that too. It really showed me that it's okay to be myself, and I found that people liked me a lot better if I was just myself rather than to try to put up a smoke screen. Step six gave me insight into where all my insanity came from. And step seven was a miracle. I humbly asked God to remove my shortcomings. And guess what? I used to live in a very fearful world where I thought people were hostile. They were out to get me. Nobody was very friendly. But you know, we don't see things the way they are. We see things the way we are. And as I became more loving and trusting, all you guys changed. All you guys changed. The whole world changed. And it was a miracle. I never would have thought that anything like that would have happened. Okay, working step 8 and 9, no more blame and guilt. Working step 10, keep doing it over again. And step 11, I find, is a real key, since I'm only praying for knowledge of God's will for me and the power to carry that out. Since everything is brought to me courtesy of God, I had better be grateful and say thanks no matter what. Because, you know, the worst thing that ever happened to me, that dark night of the soul, that was actually the best thing. And I didn't realize it until afterwards. So I've stopped looking at all the bad things in my life because that just makes me negative. And I've started looking at all the good things in life, even though they don't seem good. I try to find the good in life always. Step 12, pass, you know, keep passing this along. You know, I have a bunch of wonderful sponsees. It's one of the best things I do. I don't live with active alcoholism anymore, but having sponsees helps me to work my program. I get to listen. I get to not judge. I get to not fix. I get to feel my feelings. You know, I used to try to fix people because they'd be melting down and I couldn't stand to feel that myself. Right? So I had to fix you so I didn't feel bad. But now I just sit there and feel bad. But it's okay. It's okay because I'm used to it. It actually makes me feel alive. The best, you know, I have a sponsee who says, Ken, you're the only person who listens to me and doesn't tell me what to do. And I'm very happy that somebody can say that. I'm very happy that I can do that for someone. So this program has changed my life completely. And that laundry list trait number 9, you know, I was pursuing alcoholic women, and I was experiencing abandonment and just disappointment. And I knew that I could not fix myself. I knew I couldn't change my emotions. I knew that I'm going to pursue alcoholic women, so God help me. And I kept doing that, and I kept feeling my feelings, and my feelings changed. This feels like shit. And it's like, God, this feels horrible. God help me. And God said to me, why don't you go find somebody better? You see, that wouldn't have occurred to me because I'm a reactor. To find somebody better, I have to put myself on the line and ask somebody, find somebody who was really cool, put myself on the line and say, hey, you want to hang out? And so I did that. And there she is. So thank you very much.